We had nutball calls. We had unusual things happening. We had great guests yesterday. Great guests. Especially Mark Oppenheimer. He was great. Talking about religion and stuff. And anyway, so that's what we had yesterday. Today, we're in hope something will break out here soon that would resemble a program. Colin is off today. I'm Bruce Stevens.
New York Times. But anyway, these aides, they like to talk to the New York Times, and they said that prior to the December 2nd press conference, now this is the one where he got up and basically said he paid for everything at the cottage and basically said a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't true. It was his first major response to the accusations about the cottage. And that prior to that press conference, he sat down and he took a piece of paper.
Right.
And he drew a picture of how he felt right now. And it was very small and vulnerable. No, that's not what happened. It's not far off. He drew kind of a little T graph, a little line down the middle and a line up at the top. And above the top line, on the left side, he wrote truth. And on the other side, he wrote fiction. And then he wrote on the left side all the things that he thought were true and all the things that he thought were fiction on the right side. And then by mistake, he read the right side. No. That part is not in the article. That by mistake, he read the right side. But
one might conclude that.
But, well, a number of the things that he wrote were fiction, really were true. And I guess the argument that is offered in the New York Times today is that he really didn't know, for example, a lot of things, and he's just not that in touch with his own finances or his own house, and he sees hot tubs that aren't there, and I don't know. I mean, there were, like, you know, for example, the cabinets, the thing where they were not custom-made cabinets, you know, that he'd written custom-made cabinets in the fiction column.
Yeah. What store did he buy that hot tub in Torrington, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, the article in the Times basically does sort of talk about how, you know, he just sort of thinks that these are his buddies and they gave him stuff. And, you know, one of our occasional guests, and I guess I'm not going to give him credit for this observation right yet anyway, because I don't know whether he wants credit for it. But I thought it was brilliant. I got an email from one of our occasional guests on this show over the weekend. And he said a really interesting thing, something that I haven't heard anybody say. I mean, I don't know if you read the story on Sunday, which is sort of once again about how the government gets, like, a lot of stuff, not just from contractors, and not just from people whose tendency to give him stuff at least creates the appearance of impropriety, the appearance of conflict of interest. I mean, there's all that stuff that's becoming increasingly well documented. But then there's this whole other sphere of people who don't necessarily have anything to gain by it or anything obvious to gain by it, who are constantly giving him other stuff. So it's, you know, it's places to stay in Hawaii and stuff like that, you know. So there was this big long article about that, you know, about all these things that other people give the Rolands. And it turns out you could give the Rolands. Anybody could give the Rolands something. And they would probably take it.
How do you know I haven't given?
Well, you might have given them some cabin.
I may have lended some of my expertise to that cabin. You don't know.
Or not just the cabin, all
the
kinds
cottage,
of things. You are eligible to give him, you know, other stuff that's not for the cottage. Maybe some of those candles.
I thought those
nice candles that you get at Yankee Candle. Maybe you would like to buy some for him and Patty, and you could just give them to them.
Yeah, I could do that.
Yeah.
Well, they probably could accept those, though. Those aren't
They
worth.
Could, because you're just a schlemiel. Like, you know, you and me are schlemiels. We're not contracting.
Yeah, but isn't there a dollar amount on what you can accept?
There's a schlemiel clause, actually, in the... there are dollar amounts about what the governor can take in terms of campaign contributions, and there's dollar amounts in terms of what any public official can take from, for example, registered lobbyists and stuff like that. And obviously, there are laws that prohibit a public official from exploiting his public office for personal gain. If you read stuff like that, what it really is like is that really the state of Connecticut couldn't afford to have, as kind of a psychological fact and a sociological fact, we just couldn't have a truly middle-class governor. You know, even though you would think maybe the governor should be reflective of the interests of the vast middle class of Connecticut, even though probably $78,000 minus alimony plus free house plus car, that probably comes pretty close to somewhere around the median. That's probably higher than the median, even for Connecticut, this incredibly wealthy state. I mean, for a family that size, 78 grand minus alimony plus big house plus free car, that's, you know, that's somewhere around the median, I would guess, and probably higher, a bit higher than that. But the truth is that as a psychological matter, it's not really possible to have a governor who's middle class. So that one of the things that happened here was his friends and cronies and buddies and stuff like that, they upgraded him. They just said, you know what? we just can't stand to see you live like that. You got to go to Stackpole and get some halfway decent suits. You know, you got to look good. You got to have some nice vacations. You got to have some good meals. You got to have a wine bin at Carmen Anthony's. Who even knew Carmen Anthony's had wine bins? You got to have two wine bins at two different Carmen Anthony's. You know, you got to have, you need this stuff because you're not a player. I mean, that's part of what happened. He just wasn't a player. $78,000 a year. He just wasn't. And so his buddies, now some of his buddies did this as a matter of, you know, getting some business from the state, obviously. I mean, when Billy Tomaso does this for you, it's not simply because he feels sorry for you or he feels kind of embarrassed to be having dinner with you when you're dressed so poorly or whatever. You know, I mean, it's not just that. It's that he wants tens of millions of dollars in construction contracts. Whether he says that or not is a different matter, but I don't think it's any secret that that's what he wants and that's what he gets. But anyway, you know, as a class argument, it is kind of interesting that it would just be almost too dangerous to have a governor who really knew what it was like to live as a pretty normal person here.
You know, isn't his salary supposed to be going up, though?
Well, that's the other problem. The other problem with this whole argument was that he resisted the salary increase initially, and his salary now has gone up. He now makes $150,000 a year, but early in his term, he made $78,000 a year, minus alimony, which was substantial. I forgot, I lost my train of thought. But anyway, yeah, then there was a proposal to increase the salary, which probably not because of his tremendous belief in good government, but probably for political purposes, he rejected. He said, oh, well, everybody else's salary can go up, but not the governor's, because I want to take one for the team. Well, this seems like a less noble gesture now that we know that, you know, that it was being more than made up for by, you know, by outside people. But, you know, more to the point, if you don't feel like you have enough money, if you feel like $78,000 minus alimony is not enough to keep body and soul together, don't buy a second home. Don't buy a lake house.
Or get another job.
Yeah, get an extra job.
Nobody forced you to run for governor.
Exactly. Or get an extra job. Like he could have worked at Dairy Queen at night or something. You know?
Or get a job as a governor and, like, you know, maybe a senator on the side.
He could have done an early shift at Starbucks. You know, there's a lot of things he could have done.
Yeah.
And Patty, too, for that matter.
You know, she could have gotten a job. You're right.
Did you walk fries for that?
You know, that kind of thing. They could have pitched in. Well, anyway, we have to go. Let's take a break.
Richard in Plainville. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
I got a couple of things I'd like to talk about.
All right.
I told a man I called, signed in with, I said, you'll probably hang up with me in about the first 30 seconds.
No, we love you, Richard. We're full of love for you.
Well, number one, I think WTIC ought to raise their standards a little bit. The type of language you people keep using all the time on the radio.
All right, hang up on him. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead. What else?
Your language stinks.
All right. Did you say it stinks on WTIC?
All I can say stinks.
All right.
But, you know, you got younger people, older people listening.
Okay. We get your point on that one. What's your other point?
Okay. The other point is, if you're talking about rolling so much and you're going on blah, 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 and not really...
Did you just say blah, blah, blah on WTIC?
Well,
yeah. Go ahead. Okay, you can say blah, blah. It's kind of a
little fun. Why don't you get and find out that a few years back, we were $500 million in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we had our friend from Massachusetts, the governor's friend, came down here and said, wait, I can start this, get the ball teams up here and all this stuff, and get Adrian Zionin started. He was going to put the money up with his backers.
Mm-hmm.
He backed out. All of a sudden, we had $500 million to do all this work.
Who is this?
You're talking about Robert Kraft? You're talking about Robert Kraft. What does Robert Kraft have to do with any of this?
Well,
blah, 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 stinky. You big blah, 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 stinky.
I had two subjects to talk on.
All right. Well, okay, it's got nothing to do with it. I mean, it is completely irrelevant to what we're talking about right now. You blah, 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 stinky face.
All right. Thanks for the call. What does Kraft have to do with it?
I won't put up with people using language like that on this radio show, all right? This is a 75-year-old Heritage radio station. We are not going to have people calling up and saying stinks and blah, blah, blah.
All right. Now that we know what the
over
parameters
my ass
are.
Is that going to happen, all right?
It's 3:30.
They're not supposed to sort of really weigh everything really carefully. And I mean, the one person who's expected to be strictly political about something like this and be there until the last dog dies, apart from Brad Davis, would be... who constitutionally
It is, he is, Brad Davis is required to side with the governor no matter what. You know, the state party chairman, I mean, really, they're not supposed to be reasonable about this. They're not supposed to be equitable about it. They're supposed to basically just go in there and be partisan about it. That's what state party chairmen are for. So I don't see any point in criticizing Shepherdson. I mean, he's supposed to, that's what he's supposed to do. And, you know, and Sparkler Boy is supposed to go the other, in the other direction and be really political.
Didn't you take some kind of an oath?
I did, but, you know, I'm
not calling
okay,
Sparkler Boy anymore.
Okay, I won't call Sparkler Boy anymore. State chairman,
okay.
George Jepson.
Right.
Yeah.
Jim on a cell phone, Jim.
Hello, good afternoon.
How are you, Jim?
Not too bad. Bruce and Collins, good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Now, I've been hearing with the federal, the feds have been probing John Roland. He went from witness status to, I think it's object or subject status.
Human bullseye is actually the official term they're using now.
Is what?
Human bullseye.
Human bullseye. Oh, target, in other words.
Target's good.
Yeah, target will be fine.
He's going to be the target dog with one or two dogs ahead of him before the last dog dies, right?
Mm. Apparently, the discount chain has licensed that word. They don't actually don't want you to use target anymore, at least not in connection with John Roland. They've actually sent a letter to the U.S. Attorney's Office saying, just in terms of our sales and our overall corporate image, it's kind of a nice store where people could come and shop and buy things for themselves instead of having their cronies buy them for them. We'd prefer that the word target not be used in connection with John Roland.
So human bullseye.
Human bullseye.
Yeah.
Well, what is the next level that they call? Object? Defendant?
I actually, until this very moment, until this, I know the process that you're talking about, and I know that there have been these official declarations by the Federal Justice Department, but I never heard of any of this stuff before. I mean, I didn't know that they had these different classifications. But it sounds like the wrong direction to be going in. It doesn't sound like he's getting, it doesn't sound like he got his witness merit badge. So
yeah.
Now
you move on to the next level.
Target one. I don't think it's like that. I don't think it's a good thing. But I, to tell you the truth, I was not familiar. If, in fact, they do have this thing. Maybe this, my whole sense is that the American criminal justice system has gone classification crazy, you know, just with the red and the orange and the yellow and stuff like that. And now airline passengers are going to get that. You know, you're going to be Colonel Mustard when you get on the plane or something like that. I guess, yeah, maybe this is something new also with investigations.
Maybe so.
All right. I'll be happy to look into it for you, though.
Well, thank you very much, and have a lovely day, gentlemen.
Bye-bye. All right,
you too. Bye-bye.
I noticed that, too, that suddenly...
Human bullseye.
That he got his witness merit badge or something, so he wasn't a witness anymore. But I never heard of that. I didn't realize that they had some kind of official designation like that. You know, I mean, I was.
Well, I think you're right, though.
Like suspect.
He's going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it's actually not the direction you want to be moving in anyway. Anyway, our numbers are 522-WETF.
Find out more by calling 1-800-829-BEAR or visiting their website at VermontTeddyBear.com. And if you're looking for an original gift for somebody's birthday, Valentine's Day, a new baby, whatever, sending a Beargram gift is perfect. Call 1-800-829-BEAR and a friendly bear counselor will help you choose from over 100 bears handcrafted in the mountains of Vermont. Personalized for your loved one, delivered in their famous gift box with a free card and chocolate. And you can choose from bears like the new baby bear. It has the baby's name and birth date embroidered on the bib. Or the get well bear dressed in a hospital Johnny. They've got lots of new bears too.
Who are you calling Johnny? Oh, sorry.
Lots of new bears for Valentine's Day, too, like the all-star Valentine dressed like a sports fan. What the hell would you want to give somebody that? A Valentine dressed as a sports fan?
For the loser in your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
1-800-829-BEAR, or you can shop online at VermontTeddyBear.com. Show you care and send a bear, the creative alternative to flowers for any occasions. 1-800-829-BEAR.
Rush is going to cut the ACLU in his slack.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they've gone to bat for him. They've the Florida ACLU has filed court papers supporting his argument that investigators violated his constitutional right to privacy when they seized his junky medical records in November to investigate whether he violated drug laws and purchased prescription painkillers.
Junky medical records?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
Did I say that?
It was a slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
It may seem odd that the ACLU has come to the defense of Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, it's a little odd.
As much as he is a jackbooted, goose-stepping Nazi, the state chapter's executive director, Howard Simon,
I don't think that's what that says.
But as we have always said, the ACLU's real client is the Bill of Rights, and we will continue to safeguard the values of equality, fairness, and privacy for everyone, regardless of race or even if they're a total wienerhead.
Well, that was nice of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they are pretty consistent about this, you know? I mean, they do go to the events of skinheads and...
Even if we don't like it.
Yeah, whenever they think it's appropriate. All right, let's go back to the phone line.
All right, what do you want to go here?
Let's see, either Carol or Harvey.
All right, let's go to Carol. Hi, okay. Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I really wanted to bring you back, unfortunately, again, to the John Rowland issue.
Oh, all right. We love it.
Accuse us of dwelling on it, that's all. Oh.
I need to dwell on it a little bit
okay.
here.
The go ahead.
Where did we get that?
Well, you have some cancellations for it. Do I have to make little drum center noises?
No. No Waterbury Adult Ed tonight. And Our Lady of Loretto Church in Waterbury Religious School canceled. There seems to be a Waterbury theme running through
there. Waterbury's just paralyzed right now.
I'm in the grips of another pounding snowstorm.
Yeah. Although Mayor Jarjura has found time in the midst of all that to come out in favor of his beloved governor. Even though he's a Democrat, he said Roland has stood tall.
What?
That's what he said. Oh. Roland has stood tall. That was in the paper on Sunday. Joining us now is State Representative Andy Fleischman, Democrat from West Hartford, and one of the people we count on to see us through this time. The conscience of
his title,
and former and possibly
present
Bruce and Collin State Legislator of the Year. But he can't be State Legislator of the Year every year, can he?
If there's no better competition, if nobody else steps up, he can be.
If you would like to be State Legislator of the Year for 2004, write us a letter.
No, he didn't have to write us any letter.
I know, but I mean, if you want to dethrone Andy, if you want to get Andy out of office.
We don't want to get him
out of
office.
Send us a letter besmirching Andy's character, first of all, and then explaining why you would be better.
I think it's hardly fair.
Two-part process. If you would like to impeach Andy...
It's sort of like the California recall.
All right, let's not go crazy
State
here.
Legislator of the Year.
God.
Send us a letter detailing high crimes and misdemeanors committed by Andy and a list of your qualifications or things that you might be willing to do for us if we gave you that.
You came in here for this?
I said he was the conscience of Connecticut. I said he was the guiding light who was going to get us through this.
You did, yeah. But then you, know what, then you do like, this to
that
him.
Was right before it got ugly.
He's like the Frodo of Connecticut.
Well, hopefully you won't put me in a boat sailing off to another continent at the end of this show.
Hopefully. So what's it like to be a state legislator now? And I mean, you're not even supposed to be in session, but I would imagine that you're spending a fair amount of time over there at the LOB.
We are, and we're also spending a lot of time talking to each other on the phone, trying to keep each other updated on the latest things we've learned and our latest insights into what ought to happen. I guess I would say that last Thursday's caucus, where we all got together for 7 hours, was one of the most extraordinary experiences I've ever had as a legislator or as a person. And every person in the House Democratic Caucus felt that way. I mean, each member of the caucus stood up and said what they felt about how things are going and what the correct course of action ought to be. And there were a tremendous number of thoughtful, impassioned, articulate speeches. I think the people of Connecticut, if they had been privy to that full discussion, many of them would have fallen asleep. But those who had stayed awake would have really been proud, because it was just impressive to hear 80-something people all give their opinions and all be so thoughtful.
Those who have been present at other caucuses probably would have moved to Montana. But but that sounds like that was a good one. Well, I mean, was there sort of a diverse climate of opinion? I mean, it wasn't just sort of one person or another getting up and saying impeach, impeach, impeach. There was different. I mean, I'm not asking you to say what any particular person said, but there were.
But it would be nice.
Yeah.
Well, it started off with about 2 hours of questions. And when you hear that, that sounds like a nightmare. But the questions were incredibly thoughtful. Mm-hmm. People had really considered ramifications, like, all right, which part of these procedures are going to be public, which are going to be private? With regard to documents, what will be subject to discovery? What won't? What will be the rights of witnesses? Who precisely will be on this committee? Is the size of the committee determined for sure? You know, every possible question, and all these questions have implications for, you know, the type of due process that we'd be getting.
Mm-hmm.
After we got through that, we went member by member through the caucus alphabetically with folks speaking out. And initially, the early part of the alphabet was quite divided, but later part of the alphabet, a real consensus developed. And I don't think it's because people whose names start with the letter P have more conscience than people whose names start with the letter D. I do think
that has been proven in some studies.
Yeah. I have read those articles. But
a matter of weeks away from the convening of the legislature, which means that Governor Rowland has to give an opening speech or a State of the State address or whatever it is he does. But Edith Prague has already announced that she will be drunk at the Hukila while this is happening. She will not attend. Because she will be drunk in a tiki bar during this. No, she hasn't announced the drunk part, but she has announced that she will not attend. But, I mean, that's the beginning of 3 months, or however long the session goes, of you guys trying to do business as usual while all this nuttiness is going on. And has there been any talk about that? I mean, how you keep a wall up between, you know, passing a, you know, either dealing with budgetary issues or, it's not a budget session, I guess, but budgetary issues and all the other stuff that comes up in front of the legislature.
There has been a lot of talk about that because we're used to showing up and doing a budget and passing bills. And meanwhile, we're completely distracted with
you're,
all the
you're things. Not that used to showing up and passing a budget. It takes like till August to do it usually.
We're used to a lengthy, painful process that culminates in a budget. In any case, it's a very strange circumstance. No one has ever seen anything quite like it.
Mm-hmm.
In my communications with colleagues on both sides of the aisle, that question has been raised. Just a couple weeks ago, with some Republican friends, they were saying to me, hey, if we head down the investigatory path, we're going to suck all the air out of the room. We won't be able to do other things. And my response was, you know, I agree. However, unfortunately, it's not something that we've done. Governor Roland has put us in this circumstance by his set of actions, and we don't have a choice anymore. And I'm happy to say that there's no longer any space, really, between Republicans and Democrats. Everyone understands that to restore public trust, not just in the institution of the governorship, but in the institutions of democracy, we really have to go ahead and get to the bottom of things and figure out who did what and whether conduct was impeachable.
I mean, I just also wonder about the
what you're trying to do.
Well, that's a great question. I have
no,
colleagues.
Stop that. I told you to stop that.
I'll try and refrain from praising your questions. And praise
that was
in general,
a mediocre question.
Mediocre question. It was so-so. It was so-so, but better than the one I was asked yesterday.
Well, my feelings are very complex here because, you know, as a Packers fan, I'm very sad to see them lose. On the other hand, the silver lining is Rush Limbaugh is once again revealed to be a racist meathead who knows nothing about football. It's time for Sports at 20, French sports discussion segment. With Mr. Bubba Joyce, Mr. Hey. Bruce Stevens, and myself, Louis Gascon, and I'm here.
Louis, you're pretty upbeat today, despite
racist
the fact that the Packers lost.
Well, that's the only thing that I mean, my goal was Packers win, but McNabb has like a composite 520-yard game or something like that. But so I kind of got the second part, and I didn't get the first part.
We have a boat show ticket.
Is this the boat show that you're going to be at?
Here we go.
Oh, no. I just, have you put to saying ARG? Let's use the ARG.
ARG.
No. ARG.
We get
ARG.
Guys on
ARG.
And,
welcome to the boat show. I'm Captain Bruce Stevens. It's that kind of thing they're looking for, I think.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
Have you tried your costume on yet?
What costume?
I was told by the sales staff you're wearing a costume for the boat show. Kind of a skipper outfit.
Don't think so.
I'm almost sure tempted to show up and be your little buddy.
Well, yeah, but you won't, though, because you're not going to be around.
I won't be here. Yeah. I'll be in the desert.
Four packs of passes to the Connecticut Powerboat Show, and if you call now and you're the first caller,
1-800-953-1080,
that
number?
That's it. Yeah.
All right, we have a winner. Not
really. All right. And you get a key, and you can start the 10-foot tracker grizzly.
Can you sound a little bit more enthusiastic about this?
Well, it...
Well, no, really, you know...
You will win a key.
That's fine.
You get a key.
We have a winner, brother. We have a winner. Stop calling.
That could start a 10-foot tracker grizzly. With a 25-horsepower Mercury motor and a Trailstar trailer courtesy of Lewis Marine, Connecticut Powerboat Show.
It's actually a real grizzly, too, so be careful you
right.
put the key in.
Yeah,
they get mad.
Yeah.
They'll maul you.
It's one of the things you really need to do.
And when you come to the boat show, now where's the boat show again?
To be at the Connecticut Expo Center.
And when's the boat show again?
I'll be there from 11 to 1
say hi to
on
Captain
Sunday.
Captain Bruce, say avast.
Yeah.
Say avast.
Say what?
Avast and howdy. No, you don't say howdy. In,
say bite me. How about that?
I don't think you say bite me.
No.
To Captain Bruce. Welcome aboard, mateys.
See, you make a much better captain than I do.
No. I'll be in the desert. In the desert, you can't remember your name, for there ain't no one for to give you no shame.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Or pain, as the case may be.
Yeah.
But in order to grow, in order to recover from what I went through on Sunday, I'm going to the desert, and I'm going to camp out under the stars.
What, a football game?
Yeah. I'm going to camp out under the stars.
Big deal. It's a football game.
And I'm going to see my spirit animal.
What is your spirit animal?
And I'm actually also going to... it's the otter, but that's a whole other...
Oh, it is?
Yeah, the otter. Yeah. You haven't really said anything about this, and it's because of some gelling problems that I had. It's not that noticeable. But I had my hair cut on Friday by... Now, this is very impressive. Are you ready?
Oh, God.
The guy who cut Nora Jones's hair for her CD cover, for her first CD. That guy cut my hair.
It's very nice.
He's a stylist. Yeah. He doesn't even work out of a salon. He cut my
very
hair.
Very nice.
In his apartment.
Come to your house?
Well, no, I went to his New York City apartment to have my hair cut.
You went to his apartment?
Yeah, to cut my hair cut. To have my hair styled. Yeah. It's Laura Jones' hair.
Okay. Yeah. Very nice. It does look great.
Yeah. Kate Callahan's in my hot room yoga, too. Am I living a life or what? You know, I got my hair cut by the guy who cut Nora Jones' hair for her CD cover.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Photo. And I took hot room yoga with Kate Callahan. What else is there, really, when you think about it? Anyway, that's enough about
me. Well, there might be a little bit more, but...
Let me put it another way. That's almost enough about me.
Yeah.
Yes. We give
you talk about Hulk Curry.
Can I tell you who I think is really getting screwed in this whole Roland thing? And this has been overlooked, and I didn't even know
someone's getting screwed.
Worse than anybody else who's been mentioned so far. All right,
Jody.
Worse than Jody, Debbie. And here's why. Okay,
Debbie, his first wife,
is getting screwed because according to the New York Times today, as part of their settlement, Debbie agreed to defer tens of thousands of dollars in alimony payments until he left office. The assumption being he would lose, if he'd left office, if he hadn't run last time, he would have been worth $1 million a year easy. You know, he was $1 million a year property when you considered lobbying, consulting, directorships, all of the crap he could have gotten, basically.
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, he was $1 million a year guy. So why not defer your alimony payments till the guy actually has some money? Or I'm sure she didn't defer all of them, but in some measure, somehow or other, this agreement includes the deferral. Well, now, I mean, really, he's going to be lucky if he can get a job jerking Slurpees.
She'll get her money.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Well, all I'm saying is, you know, this just turned out to have been a really bad way to go. It was a bad operating assumption, anyway, that, you know, that he was going to be, I mean, really, he's going to be lucky if he can jerk Slurpees for a living. And
you really believe that?
Well, no. I mean,
you know as well as I do. He'll find something. He'll end up with some.
I don't think
gigantic job someplace. And
he's so radioactive right now. I really think that it's going to be like an overseas job. I mean, really, heck, a Halliburton.
Well, maybe
it will be. Put him in charge of their Afghanistan office or something. You know, it'll be like, you know, human relations director in Kabul or something. But I mean, no, not here in this country. No, I don't think so. He's too hot to handle. I mean, first of all. You know, who's going to give him a job? I mean, most of the people who have looked upon him favorably and have showered him with love in the past are lawyering up right now. They're not kindly disposed towards him. They're paying legal fees so that they can figure out how to explain their relationship with him.
Is Brad need a co-host?
So they're off the table. Yeah, maybe it could be the Brad and Johnny G show. this is Brad Davis and Johnny G. Live in the morning.
DJ Johnny G.
Yeah. Kicking it old school. Maybe 93.7. Maybe he could have Big Reg's shift. It could be DJ Johnny G. But I don't know. You tell me what. There's no job in Connecticut he's going to have.
He'll come out of this just fine.
Yeah, maybe.
Eventually.
Maybe. You know.
No.
Yeah, but the charm will take you so far, and then you actually have to sort of develop some actual skills. You have to think about what you're saying, and I don't think Clark is going to do that this time around. And Edwards just doesn't move the needle because nobody knows who he is. And then there are guys who are in the opposite position. Like their act was tired a long time ago. I mean, you know.
Who could that be?
John Kerry is the Nipsey Russell of politics, you know what I mean? It's like nobody wants to see this again. Nobody ever wanted to see it that much the first 12 times.
Now there's the name.
And
Nipsey Russell.
And the same thing with Gephardt. I mean, these are not guys who have anything new to say or, you know, and Lieberman is just dead in the water. He just, you know. I mean, if you were any better in the, well, never mind.
That's probably just
and,
as well.
And so you've got Howard Dean. And, you know, Howard Dean is not a great candidate. He's got a great organization, and his Joe Trippi went out there and figured out the internet, and they have people making political donations the way they shop at Amazon.com, and really it's gonna, changing the face of politics, at least for the moment. And you can see there's a change of weather in the Dean campaign. At first it was granola heads and freaks and progressives and, you know, and Gene McCarthy people and stuff like that, and geeks. And then gradually there's been a normalization of the Dean base. to a point now where the people who are joining now as dean volunteers and going to these meetups and stuff like that are the people who only would go when they started to realize there was a chance of winning. Back when he was a boutique candidate or a cause worth dying for, the kinds of people who are joining up now would never have bothered with him. But now he's attracting a different kind of supporter. And, you know, I mean, once again, can he go all the way? I have no idea.
Here's Paul in Hartford. Paul?
All right. Hey, I'm redeeming myself because I was one of the people who voted for Governor John G. Rowland. I got a scoop for you, and this can be verified. The chairs of the Republican town committees in the state of Connecticut will be meeting with John Rowland Wednesday.
Okay.
There you go. Well, maybe they'll tell him to step down.
Stop the presses. Yeah, I'm sure they will. I'm sure the actual chairs will say that, and furniture is probably telling them to resign at this point. But
maybe talking to furniture.
Why did you vote for John? What are you, like, throwing up peyote or something, and you just hit the switch by accident? What was wrong with you?
Well, you know, the thing, you got me there, the ACLU, the biggest liberal organization supporting a homophobe. I mean, that takes the cake.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you didn't answer my question, but you sound high anyway. But thanks for calling.
Another satisfied customer.
You know, I
don't... You sound high anyway?
I just... I don't know. I mean, for us, I think there's this... you know who I liked over the weekend? I like Tom Scott. I loved his piece in the... Do we have another minute?
Yep.
Well, I liked his piece in the commentary section of The Current. And to tell you the truth, I prefer Tom Scott and... Well, he's kind of on our side with this one. But, you know, and even Brad Davis and Crazy Buddy and stuff like that, you know, to people who sort of suddenly want to tear John Rowland apart, but, you know, they couldn't figure this out 6 months ago. I mean, this just never occurred to them 6 months ago that there was a problem here. I mean, you know, almost every... We've been talking about this stuff for years. And, I mean, I also do want to say that I'm not talking about somebody like the morning our morning host, Ray Dunaway, who, you know, I mean, he was ideologically and personally disposed to support John Rowland, and now he kind of, I think, is seeing the light. And, I mean, I think it's legitimate to make a change like that one. But these people who have, like, all this righteous indignation now... Well, you know, that righteous indignation was intellectually available to them 6 months ago. So come on. I mean, really, I've got more respect for Brad and Buddy, although the two of them are going to be sharing a room with a waiting forensic if the two, the way things are going.